Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and wherever you are, whenever you are, it might not be evening where you are when you're listening to this, because we have people all over the world listening, and that's very exciting and makes it very exciting to do this show. Tonight's guest is somebody I've been hearing about forever from a close friend who's a healer. Ursula Lentin is with us, and we will be talking to her in a few minutes. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing, or as they seem to be lately, political rants, I don't know. Obviously, if you're on social media or even watching TV, everything that's going on is focused on Ferguson, Missouri, and the police shootings there and all the craziness that's gone on. And it's hard to make sense out of that stuff unless you take a step back. And there are a couple of ways to do that. One is to realize the emotions that we can have really break down to two: love or fear. And everything that has been going on with the police department in Ferguson and a lot of other places is based on fear. I always say that anger is fear and drag. So if somebody is acting out and acting angry, what's really going on is they're scared. And that doesn't surprise me for the situation there. But there's also a sense of entitlement and an assumption that if you don't do what I tell you to do right when I tell you to do it, I'm entitled to kill you. And I don't even have a way to wrap my head around that. The idea that somebody is allowed to do that just because somebody either doesn't agree with you or doesn't respond to your instructions immediately. My joke is when I grew up, oh, wait a minute, there's no evidence I grew up. I lived in New York City in the 60s when it was a really dangerous place. It's not as dangerous now as it was when I was a kid. And I spent time on the subways. I went to high school and college with long subway commutes, and never, ever in my life had a confrontation, much less anything else. And during that time, there was a struggle about firearms in the police department. They wanted to stay with their six-shot revolvers with ammunition that wouldn't go through walls and wouldn't go through people. They really didn't want to have collateral damage. And that worked for decades. It wasn't a problem until semi-automatic weapons showed up in drug gangs, and all of a sudden the police didn't have enough firepower. And they switched over, and all kinds of other things have happened around that with this kind of arms race on the street. What do you do when the people who are trying to protect you are terrified all the time because of what might be behind a door or what somebody might have under their coat? It's a very, very serious change in the environment of what happened, and I understand that. But there's a whole other piece to this, and that is that for many, many people, although it's 200 years after the fact, they are still emotionally fighting the Civil War. Whether they're talking about the government coming to get them, well, the North did come and tell the South how to live their lives and take over. Or they're talking about our way of life, because their way of life was changed. Many, many different things that people are, whether they realize it or not, still angry about. And when push comes to shove, that gets acted out in these incredibly violent and bizarre ways. The kind of switching gears, everybody talks about the apocalypse, whether it's got to do with Sharknado or anything else. Apocalypse is a popular word. And people interpret it as the end of the world, but that's not what the word means. What the word means is that the veil will be lifted. And what we would like to think that's about is that we will get special knowledge, that somehow there's going to be a transformation, and in that transformation we'll get special knowledge and things will be beautiful as they're revealed. And I think that's true. That's the transition this planet is going through. But right now what the apocalypse means and what's being unveiled is all the darkness. The darkness in people's hearts, the darkness in organizations, the way politics has been run, the way all kinds of things, including these police departments, have been operating in the dark, in the shadows, unknown to most people. And there's so much light on the planet now that there are no shadows for that stuff to be hidden in, and it's all happening out in the open, on the radio, on television. Everybody knows about it. Everybody's talking about it on social media. So we are in the middle of the unveiling of things that we don't want to know about. Parts of our psyche that are manifested through all this crazy stuff that's going on out there. But that's the good news. The good news is that there's no place for it to hide. The good news is that there's a conversation about it instead of it being hidden. The good news is that the power is shifting. And this is exactly what's supposed to be happening now. Before any major change, there is a period of major chaos. And we're getting our share. But the crazier it gets, the more you can realize, anyway, that the energy of the shift is going to be massive. The changes on the planet are going to be huge, because the level of chaos is an indication of the level of change, and that change is going to be spectacular. So while you're looking at all this and taking whatever political action you're taking or doing whatever you're doing, also realize that spiritually, it's an indication of the changes happening. They just aren't being neat and tidy, because life isn't neat and tidy. Who told us it was supposed to be neat and tidy? It never is. So let's all hang in there and send lots of love and light and violet flame to all the places and all the people that are involved in all this, as we would say in Yiddish, mishigas, craziness. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing or political rant. You can decide which one it is. And now we get to have some fun with Ursula Lentine from Atlanta, Georgia. How you doing tonight?
Wonderful. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is delightful.
Well, I've heard about you for a very long time because we have a mutual friend. My brother from another mother, Frank, who I've known for longer than either one of us likes to admit, always says incredible things about you and your work. And I finally said, okay, I got to find out what's going on here. Let's have Ursula on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I always ask the guest, how did you get here? And what was your path that led you to the work that you're doing? And you're doing very powerful work, and we'll get to talk about that. But, you know, what was your walkabout and challenge, and how'd you get here?
It's kind of interesting, because the further I get away from the beginning, the clearer I can see it. So if you asked me this 10 years ago, I'd say, I have no idea. But if now I can look back and I can say, okay, in second grade, I had a spiritual experience in church. It was a combination of the lighting and the music and sitting next to my little friend and the gold flecks on the mural in front of me. And that church at St. Joan of Arc in St. Clair Shores, Detroit, Jesus wasn't nailed on the cross. He was in a nice robe or whatever, and his hands were spread out in peace and actually in a blessing pose, which I do now in pranic healing. And I just felt the presence of God at that moment. And as a kid, everything is new, so you have no idea that that's something spectacular. That's a change point in your life.
Right.
And then now in the last maybe 8 years or so, I've done a lot of past life regression. And I've been a nun and a monk and a, you know, sequestered mountain dweller, one with nature and just praying. And so this is not new for me. And the more I remember, the more my personal veils are lifted, the more I realize who I am and where I've come from. So it's been a very long journey. My family actually is healing. My grandmother used to have tarot cards on her kitchen table, and she would you know, play with the cards. And it was normal because as a kid, you don't know what's not normal and what's normal. So it was normal for me. And her sister, Aunt Josie, after her husband died and her kids all grew, her living room was her lazy boy chair and life-size statues of Jesus and Mary and, you know, palm fronds and candles. And she used to take pilgrimages to Our Lady of Fatima and take people there. And she would talk to her husband who had passed. We'd be visiting, you know, let's go visit Aunt Josie. And she'd say, damn it. And we'd like, what's the matter? He's smoking those cigarettes again. And we look at each other like, Mom, is that okay? You know, and she's like, it's just Aunt Josie. Just smile. So this is natural for me. It's normal for me.
So what happened between second grade and now?
Well, I was raised Catholic, and I got called into the library and cornered by a nun, and she said, listen, young lady, you are asking too many questions. You know, you're disturbing the other students. And I said, I'm not disturbing the other students. I might be disturbing my teachers, but listen, now that I've got you here with me, I've got some questions. So I was a disgruntled teen, you know, like, none of this is real. Everybody's screwed, you know, went into darkness for 4 years. And then busted out and landed in Los Angeles, where everything is so crazy. And there is every kind of spiritual path that you could take. And I took at least 20 in a few years. And my core is metaphysics. So I study metaphysics. I have a license in metaphysics. I'm a minister with Centers for Spiritual Living. And that's my foundation. And then from there, I discovered pranic healing. And this is a cute story. I have a friend, Dr. Valerie Davis. She's a dermatologist in Florida, and she has two homes. Her husband lives up here in Atlanta. So I would see her only every few weeks at a time, and her face started changing. And I said, Valerie, what are you doing something different? You know, she's a dermatologist. So she's like, no, not really. And then I see her another time. Valerie, did you get something done? She's like, no. And then I kept seeing her, and I'm like, you look more peaceful, you look prettier, your eyes are more sparkly. What's going on? And she says, oh, I'm just studying this thing called pranic healing. And then she said, hey, can you pull together a class in Atlanta? And so I did, you know, just curious. I was in the class, and it was such a wonderful treat, because in metaphysics you study and you know and you look and you see, and but in pranic healing, it took all of that information and put it into application. How to use the laws and principles of the world, of the universe, to heal people, to heal yourself, to create things, to suppress things, to manage your environment energetically. Now I'm hooked.
Which is a good transition to telling us about pranic healing. So what is this method?
This is, pranic healing was created by Master Choa Kaksui, and he was born in the Philippines from a Chinese family, and he was a sickly kid, and they ate a lot of pork over there, and they have different traditions going on in the same time. It's kind of a cosmopolitan area. So they have Christianity and Muslim, and then they have voodoo and, you know, all these people out in the woods that you go to see. And so it was a big mix. And when he couldn't get better, he started studying because it was also an interest for him, just the spiritual energy. And he went to all the different religions. He went to the forgotten texts, the archives, and he just studied everything. He had no hesitation to pick something up and see what it is. And then he studied and pulled what worked. So it didn't matter the source. He just pulled what, this works, this doesn't work, that's out. And they said he had thousands of case studies. And he put together an energy healing modality. And he's a chemical engineer.
Mm.
And if you know any engineers, they're not very woo-woo.
But they're very thorough.
Yes, and he was. And that's how he put together this energy healing modality. I have a lot of respect for it because one side of my brain is scientific and the other is spiritual creative. So when I can put one teaching and both sides of my brain get stimulated, I'm thrilled.
So how would you describe what's unique about pranic healing? There are so many methods out there, obviously.
What it stands out for me is we cleanse. You think, well, yeah, if you start studying what is negative energy, what is disease, what is stress, and it's congested, concentrated energy that mm-hmm. kind of bottlenecked and got stuck in a one place and it just keeps piling up. So it would be a really good idea to remove that instead of just energize it. Like in the Pentecostal churches, they slap him on the forehead and say, you're healed, and the guy falls backwards.
Right.
But he's actually using the ajna and his will and invoking, and he's actually doing a healing, except he's not being very kind to the person. So if you remove negative energy first, then you can tap off or top off what each chakra needs instead of over-energizing. Because if you over-energize, you know, like a kid on sugar, it doesn't do any good. You just swung everything to the other way. So balance is the key, and that's what that's what this aims for. And his mission basically is to reduce pain and suffering in the world and have a pranic healer in every family. This way, it takes power into our hands and out of the medical industry's hands.
Yeah, that idea of a healer in every family is in a number of traditions, and it's a wonderful idea that there be somebody who can make the shift that people need when they need it.
Yes. And it's so we feel so helpless when somebody we love is sick. And it just eats us alive. But when we have tools, we're so grateful that we know something that can help somebody.
Right. Right. And the medical model, in many ways, keeps people in that state of being powerless. That's why people are called patients who wait for the doctor.
I never heard that. That's silly and funny.
And we're usually not so patient.
Right.
At least I'm not.
And they practice, right? That's their practice.
Right, they're practicing on us. Yeah, and the language doesn't work really well when you break it down.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the method. Does it look like laying on hands similar to Reiki or some of the other traditions?
It's similar to Reiki in the fact that both modalities are using energy and transferring energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not my energy that does the healing at all. The more I can back out of it, the better the healing becomes. It is a no touch because, you know, when we touch people, the government gets involved and wants a license. So, and there's no sexual misconduct that can possibly happen. You're just clean. You're clean and clear. And Master Choa is one of those brilliant minds. So he could have said, hey, I want to get filthy rich with my mind. I can do that. I could do this. I could do that. He could do anything, really, with the way his mind is. But he sat down and said, what can I do with this power? he thought, hey, why don't I just heal the world? Okay. But when we, it's no touch. So he designed the practice to take care of the pranic healers. And many areas in pranic healing are about self-care. Because remember, he comes from a country where there was people doing natural healing because they didn't really know how it all worked. They just sort of did it. But they would pick up disease and be bedridden for a year. Or they would, you can see psychics and people who kind of do natural healing or their own thing. They carry a lot of body weights and body mass, especially around the hips area. So it's like their head, you know, almost like a triangle or a Christmas tree. And it's to keep themselves weighted, but they also pick things up. And how do I stay grounded? And when you look at pranic healers, they're like good-looking, healthy people with different personalities. We're not all zombies because we meditate too much. It's one of the practices, I was just talking today with another colleague, it's one of the few spiritual practices that actually keep you grounded.
Which is the key to all of this stuff. One of my, I don't know if it's pet peeve, but my observations is that there are many, many traditions where the focus is on the upper chakras and the experiences you get by being in the upper chakras or leaving through the upper chakras, and doing that without being grounded is at the very least dangerous. So martial arts always start with grounding techniques, but many healing practices don't start with healing with the grounding techniques, and the people that are attracted to spiritual stuff think that the upper chakra experiences are the wonder of it all and don't want to be grounded. They don't want to deal with all that messy stuff in the lower chakras.
But guess what? We have a human a body and we're here on the planet Earth. So why not be here and enjoy this experience?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So my experience and observation of a lot of the people that are doing those many, many, many different spiritual practices you were describing in LA is they're just using it as another drug.
Yes.
It's a way to get high. It's a way to feel cool.
Yes.
Without using a substance, but you're getting that same experience, which is basically being out of your body and buzzy. Mm-hmm. And you can't do any good work that way.
No. And if we bring the energy into our body and move it through our body, it kind of alchemizes and has a golden quality to it. Mm-hmm. And when we add love into that, it energizes that even further. So there's a lot of vibration that happens moving energy through the body, just like lovemaking. You know, when people do tantric lovemaking, that's like the best of everything because it's grounded, it's physical, and it's spiritual. And the two energies can combine and go really super high because there's two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when we use our physical body to enjoy and have spiritual experiences, that's the whole combination.
Terrific. We're going to go to a break soon. I want to make sure that people know how to find you. What's your website?
My personal website is UrsulaLentini.com.
And you better spell that for people.
Sure. UrsulaLentini.
UrsulaLentini.com. So when we come back, I want to hear a little more nitty-gritty detail. What does this look like? How does it work? What do you use it for? All of that stuff. Tell us about pranic healing.
Great.
But we're going to go off to a break, and you can take a break.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be lovely? So we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. And a joke never gets old. Oh, my God. And we will continue our conversation with Ursula Lentini here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Don't go nowhere. Be right back.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Ursula Lentini. Talking about pranic healing. So it sounds like a very comprehensive approach that has taken pieces from all over the place, but give people an idea what the experience is like, both for a practitioner and a client.
Okay. As a pranic healer, we invoke. So almost anything we do in our practice, we invoke. So that just means it's not me. So ego doesn't have to get involved. Protection is there. And everything flows much nicer. If we forget to invoke, that's it. Anything that happens is your own damn fault. So we invoke, and then we have a salt bowl, because salt water absorbs negative energy and it kind of traps it in there. Mm-hmm. If you think of energy as living, so look at the oxygen molecule, that's a living thing. It causes life, actually. And when negative energy is around, just think of a worry thought. It's in our aura, and we can kind of put it in the back of our mind, so to speak, but it's still in our aura. And it'll start floating back to the center of energy and notice there it is again. And the more attention, the more hatred, the more anger we give to the worry thought, it grows. And this becomes a negative energy thing. So if you took that negative energy thing out of somebody's aura and just flicked it away, just like a little puppy, it would kind of come back. We're an energy field, we're a magnet. So we host positive energy, negative energy, worry, stress. And the more we make ourselves available to negative energy, if we're doing drugs and heavy alcohol, if we hang on to anger, if we're resentful, if we're in a place of shame and blame, we're lowering our vibration, and this negative energy can attract and accumulate. So as we're removing negative energy, we want to put it somewhere so it doesn't get stuck on us and it doesn't go back to the person. So we put it in a salt bowl. We also spray with salt, water, and oils to keep our hands clean. We had one of the masters who kind of was so busy, she would drive and answer the phone and be healing, and she just didn't have time to keep her cleansing routine up, and her hand actually got dark and stiff. Mm. So that showed the whole pranic healing community, oh, that's why that protocol is in there, to clean our hands regularly. We also wash with salt water, salt soap afterward, especially doing stronger cases. So those are some pieces of self-care. We cut cords at the end of every session to stop the energy flow through us to the other person, so the energy doesn't come back to us, or the person doesn't continue taking our energy after we've let the angels and everybody else go home. If we forget to cut cords, then that person can suck our personal energy. The person receiving the pranic healing will just sit quietly. We ask them to put the tongue on the palate. So that's a Chinese meridian system circuit breaker. The energy just stays inside the body and it continues to spiral through all the different moving parts of the energy field, the spiritual cord, the chakras, the aura. And we just cleanse their aura, their outside aura, but it's called general sweeping. And then we target in the chakras. If somebody has a diagnosis, Master Choa has created protocols for us. We can turn to that page, look up that protocol, and he will tell us which chakras to work on, which colors to use. The advanced pranic healing uses colors. And we do a lot of cleansing and then energizing to the appropriate degree, stabilize the work, and cut cords between myself and the client, and do a closing invocation. Let the angels and everybody else go home, because they were doing the work anyway.
So just to clarify, when you do the color work, are you doing that as an internal process where you visualize and feel the color, or are you actually shining color lights on people, which is a method that was very popular for a while?
We don't even have to visualize it. So if you're not clairvoyant, some of us are and some of us are not. So you just understand, I am now using light whitish blue, for instance. Mm-hmm. And different colors come from within our different chakras. They're kind of created there. We're a palette of mixing colors. So I can get blue from this chakra. I can get violet from that chakra. And I just access that chakra by becoming aware of that chakra and transferring color with the energy.
Okay.
Because each color has a different property.
Right. Well, the more I ask you details, the more you're revealing about what the system is, and it's absolutely fascinating to me.
Yeah, because you probably understand more than most people. So maybe some of your listeners are like, what? But I think you might be saying, oh. So there's no secrets. It's just systems, and it makes sense. When you sit down and you listen to these things in class, your mind changes from Saturday morning to Sunday night because the way the class is set up, it's step by step by step. As the students are listening and participating and experiencing, they said, "Oh, I've always known that. No one's ever explained it like this." Or, "Oh, I never realized that that and that are connected." It's everybody's mind just gets blown. They're like, "Of course."
Right.
So people are seeing energy and feeling energy, and they look outside and they see prana in the sky and ground energy. And they're like, wait a minute. Right.
And for those folks that are not familiar with the terminology, prana is the term the term for life force in Hindu tradition, actually, as opposed to chi in the Chinese tradition and some of the other words that are used for life force.
Exactly. So it's funny that a Chinese man is using prana, because that to him made more sense to use that word because of the studying he did.
Right. Well, the more you look at this stuff, the more you realize that it all goes back to the Hindu traditions anyway. They codified it and figured it out way before everyone else did, and then everybody did their variations on it.
Yes.
So on so many different levels, I'm always amazed at the things that come up that wind up being basically Hindu, including... Have you noticed the parallels between Catholic ritual and Hindu rituals?
No, I haven't.
Elements of the personality of God, whether they're the archangels or Mary or any of the others, as icons of some kind. The rosary beads are a mala, saying the same prayer over and over again as a mantra, lighting the candles, and invoking a blessing while you're lighting the candles, focusing it on an individual or a problem. All of those things go back to India.
Very interesting. I never saw the correlation, but it's there right in front of us.
Well, you know, you're in the middle of your tradition.
Yes.
Doing what you do, and you don't necessarily, first of all, you don't necessarily see the other one, but trying to, you know, seeing the perspective, first of all, from a Catholic point of view would be heresy. So, you know, you're certainly not
going to go there. No. Might go to hell.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so that's a whole different conversation.
Let's not go there. Let's not go to hell and let's not talk about it.
Right.
I was raised Catholic, and then I was, you know how they joke, recovering Catholic, and then I'm fully recovered and integrated, so everything's good there. And I just skip the parts that I don't agree with or make me mad. I just say, well, those don't count in my life, and I'm not going to put any energy there, so I'll just go with the early version of what I was taught, where God is love. Mm-hmm. So they teach you that for the first 3 years and you're hooked, and then they get complicated thereafter. But I went to a church service. One of my nephews, I think, was getting his first communion, first confession, first communion.
Close.
And it was an older church, a big stone building, and everything was very traditional. And I watched the sequence of events that puts a mass together. And I watched how they used the energy, the music, the everything, all the ritual, and how it built and built and built, and what it was happening to the people energetically and what was going on at the altar. And I was blown away, because now that I understand the technology of spirituality, I can see what the organized religion has done with it. And it was amazing, because I said, oh, they got it. They know exactly what they're doing.
Well, the people who put it together at the time knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the priests at this point have any idea at all, they're few and far between.
I would imagine.
There's actually a fascinating book and movie called The Rite, R-I-T-E, which is about a seminarian in the Midwest who gets selected to be the exorcist for his state. And like most of the young priests, he doesn't believe in Satan or demons or any of that. He thinks it's old-fashioned. And
until he meets one.
Exactly. And that's what the story is about him going through the study at the school, and then he apprentices with somebody who's been an exorcist for 40 years and finds out what the reality is. So there are many things in the Catholic Church in particular where the original core of it and the understandings and the energy of it was extremely powerful, but that hasn't really been passed down, at least to this generation of American priesthood. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have that understanding, that deeper understanding.
That's true. I wonder what they do when people who are possessed or, you know, just suicidal or just living in the darkness. I mean, I wonder what kind of tools they have.
It's an interesting question, and it's kind of, boy, we're going off into exorcism here, which is not where I thought we were going to be with this.
No.
You know, exorcism works for what it's designed for, but it's a very confrontational, high drama method. And the assumption in the Catholic point of view is that anything that can possess you must be demonic. And most possessions are ghosts. So if you do a Catholic exorcism ritual when the possessing entity is a ghost or an elemental, which is pretty unusual but possible, they just sit there and go, what are you doing? This making, you know, it, none of the things that they're doing, none of the invocations, none of the confrontation is addressed to that kind of entity. And that's a misunderstanding. You know, it's it happened a long time ago, and basically nobody is saying, no, wait. There's something else going on here, because there's so many other things connected together based on the original assumptions. Mm. So I think it is a problem in that tradition, because it goes back to, you need to do more of all the things that Catholics do. And if you don't, you're a sinner and bad things will happen. And that's not necessarily a good way to approach somebody who's in a dark place.
No. Yeah.
It's not a counseling approach that's necessarily good for people that are in that place. So there are, in every tradition, including the priesthood, people that have tremendous empathy and a lot of training, both in their tradition and outside their tradition, and do wonderful work. As a medicine man once said at a teaching circle that I was very honored to be in, I'm a born again heretic. You know, I'm probably one way or another a heretic in almost every tradition, because I just look at what I see and what I understand moment to moment as we go along. And traditions don't like that. They want you to follow the way they do.
Follow the script. Follow the rules.
Follow the rules. Follow the script.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I'm hearing within the pranic healing, is that, what's his name again? What's the master's name?
Master Choa Kuk Sui.
Yeah, no wonder I can't remember.
Right.
That he looked at it in that same way and said, what are the pieces from every tradition that work? And let's not waste our energy on the stuff that does not, in a provable way, move the healing forward. And my guess is that at various times he got himself in trouble with the powers that be in each tradition.
I'm quite sure. But he was a man of eloquence, so he could he could probably, you know, somebody could confront him and say, listen, you know, you're not allowed to take these things from our sacred religion. And he would turn things around just because mm-hmm. of the way he is. He's just brilliant like that. And the other person would be like, oh, thank you. Oh, yes, please continue. You're really, you know, doing a service to our Buddhism or to right. our Judaism.
Yep. Is he still alive?
No, he passed in 07, and his student body was so upset because they thought, oh, dear, 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 we don't know enough. He has so many answers. We're still following him. We haven't a clue. What are we going to do? And they were upset, and they missed him. They loved him so much. And soon after, he started appearing to the clairvoyants and to students that had never met him. It was as if his hologram broke into a million pieces and he could further the work much greater than when he was in his physical right. form.
Right.
So people don't miss him as much anymore because he's there.
Well, and that's been true of all the great teachers yes. one way or another.
Like Jesus.
Like Jesus. People typically don't know where the expression "don't worry, be happy" comes from. It was the aphorism of a teacher named Mir Baba, and it was before his death. He said, "Don't worry, be happy. I will always be with you." In the same way, it's like, yes, my body may leave, but I'm not going to leave. I will still be available. You'll still be able to get the information that you need.
Love never dies. So when a teacher is soaked in love, and that's what they're expressing and encouraging, that teacher will never be forgotten.
Right. Right. And the students who have the capability of moving past the teacher yes. wouldn't be able to do that if the teacher was still there. So, you know, the brilliance of the individual disciple needs to have the space to grow.
Yes. And I think he really allowed for that. When he left, he assigned several masters to take his place, and he divided them up in territories throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And each of them is bringing the teaching in a new way with different strengths. So the different personalities bring the teaching, you know, they combine. So one represents love, one is a couple. My teacher, Master Glenn and Master Marilag, they're on the East Coast. And they fell in love and like when they were 16 years old. Now they're getting ready to be grandparents soon. And they represent the love and fun and cooperation, the family aspect of a community. And then Master Ko, he's on the West Coast. He's an engineer himself. He's very straight line, very Ajna. Here's the education. Here's the structure. Here's what you need to know. He's a great leader and a great teacher, and he's about the information. And then Master Hector, he loves studying the esoteric things. You can ask him anything about history and about lineage, and he'll tell you the whole story. So between all of these teachers taking on Master Choa's work, they're just developing it even further.
Right, right. And that's been true in many of the traditions, although not all, because some of them are still so focused on the original teacher,
mm-hmm.
or at least seemingly so.
Mm-hmm. And he was a humble teacher because he always said, my teacher, Mahaguruji Meilin, which was channeled, he met him in prayer and got information and you know, this is the way he explained things to him. So he totally acknowledges his teacher, even though this is a being who was, I don't even know when he was walking the planet, but.
Right. And there are several healing modalities like that. Kundalini Reiki was channeled directly from Master Kutumi.
He's somebody in our lineage as well, Master Kutumi. Mm-hmm. We come from Buddha Kuan Yin. She's in our mm-hmm. lineage. So,
well, absolutely fascinating. So how can people access Pranic Healing? Is there If they're obviously, if they're in Atlanta, they can find you.
Oh, yeah. Come see me. I'll take care of you. And I also work by Skype. So I work, you know, people in Europe and all over America. Skype is wonderful.
Skype's amazing, yes.
Just work by phone. But if people want to learn more, they can just go to YouTube. There's lots of, you know, videos explaining what is pranic healing and different versions. So not all of them are going to be completely accurate, but I think the viewer can get a chance to understand what the teaching is and where it comes from. We have, again, Master Ko on the West Coast is pranichealing.com, and Master Marilag and Master Glenn are pranichealingusa.com.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that there's a network of classes all over the place.
Yes. So I teach the first class as many all over the world, and that's called Basic Pranic Healing. Master Glenn is teaching it this weekend here in Atlanta. And to be taught a beginner's class by a master, these students have no idea how lucky they are. And then there's several classes. So I've studied tons of different modalities and practices. And when I came across pranic healing, I started investigating, like, okay, you compare to what you know to the ideas that were presented here. And everything that I've been taught is already in pranic healing, but then pranic healing is doing it right. So it's very interesting.
Well, it certainly sounds like it's integrated lots of threads from many traditions. And the way you described the method and the approach makes perfect sense to me. Mm-hmm. Yes, sounds absolutely wonderful. And I am so glad to meet you. After hearing about you for so long.
Do I live up to all of the things that Frank said?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Absolutely.
And Frank is a wonderful guy because he has no idea what kind of power he's sitting on.
That's absolutely true. And I remember him saying grace at his house one of the few times that I got to be down in Atlanta with him. And he opened his eyes and said, "What?" Because I was just staring at him. And he said, "Do you have any idea how much energy you have when you're doing that? What you bring in?" He said, "No, I'm just saying grace." which I think was the moment where he finally was willing to take a look at the possibility that he could do this kind of work.
Yes.
But yes, he's very, very powerful.
Yes. He just sits in the corner and meditates and the whole room starts shining furniture's moving. And you're just like, who is in here?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Ursula, as usually happens with my best guests, we're out of time.
Okay.
So you're just going to have to come back.
Okay. I have so many areas to talk to you about. I do youth ministry. I do couples work. There's so many things I'd love to talk to you about.
Fantastic. I would love to have you back again. Your website is ursulalentini.com, and that will be on the postings as well so people can find you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And if you've gotten at all curious about this guy David and what in the world does he do, you can find out more at househealing.com, and cleverly hiding on the contact page is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a free 20-minute conversation and assessment of what's going on with a person, a place, a situation, whatever it happens to be. And we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want to know more about the Farkas Files and the archive, which goes back a ridiculous number of years now, I really should find out how long we've been doing this. You can go to thefarkasfiles.com. And the show is also on iTunes, Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and probably a bunch of other places I don't even know about. So you can just search for Empower Radio or Farkas Files, and it's all there. So again, thank you so much for listening wherever you are, whenever you are listening. And it makes it exciting to do the show, knowing that there are people all over the world that tune in. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.